If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. These colorful guidebooks are filled with great information and are one of my favorite guidebooks. I have 20 of them here on my bookshelf. Learn more at dk.com. Amateur Traveler, episode 453. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about markets and muralists, funicular and street food, as we go to Guanajuato and San Miguel de Allende in Mexico. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We'll be hearing more from our sponsor later on, but first, let's hear about Guanajuato, Mexico. I'd like to welcome to the show Tim Luffel, the editor of Perceptive Travel and also the author of World's Cheapest Destinations, and a friend who has come to talk to us about the state of Guanajuato, Mexico. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And Tim, let's put Guanajuato on the map first. Why are we talking about it, and where would we find it on a map of Mexico?
Well, this is in the true interior of Mexico, the colonial center of the country where it's got some of the oldest settlements from when the Spanish came in. And it's also where the revolution started. So that's kind of the historical marker why a lot of people would come here. But we're about 4 hours north of Mexico City and about 3 hours west of Guadalajara, the two biggest cities in Mexico. From a tourism standpoint, usually people know about San Miguel de Allende because there's a very large retiree community there and vacation home community of Americans and Canadians. And then I live in the capital city of Guanajuato, which is where the first battle of the Mexican Revolution took place.
Excellent. And you have lived in Mexico for a couple of years now?
Yeah, I came here for a year with my family and then went back to the U.S. for a while. And then this time we've been here for about a year and a half. And we'll probably keep going back and forth like that because I have a 14-year-old daughter.
Now, I happen to have a guidebook for San Miguel de Allende, which was sitting on my night table for a while. But assuming that other people don't, why should somebody come to Guanajuato?
A lot of times people will just go to San Miguel de Allende because they've got friends or relatives there and go back, or people will kind of do a little circuit and they'll come to Guanajuato first because that's actually closer to the airport, and then they'll move on. But San Miguel de Allende is known as the prettiest colonial city in Mexico. It's certainly the best maintained, partly because of all that foreign money that has flowed in. There are plenty of people of modest means there, but there are also quite a few millionaires living in San Miguel de Allende. If you look at the real estate prices there, it's kind of shocking. It's a really well-maintained city, super clean. Everything's beautiful. You don't see graffiti all over the place. Some people are kind of put off by that because they think it's not authentic, but actually a lot of Mexicans I've talked to look at that and go, wow, this is what every city should look like. Why aren't the rest of them this way? And so they're very proud of it, and they think it's a nice showpiece for the country.
Well, and one of the reasons I have
for a long time that on my nightstand is it's just a gorgeous looking city, as you mentioned, with all of the different colorful buildings heading up the hillside in a mountainous area, was my impression.
Yeah, and the climate's great too. Both of these cities are pretty similar, whereas other parts of Mexico on the coast that people are very familiar with are hot and humid and tropical. This is a highland climate. It's from 6,000 to 6,500 feet in altitude, depending on where you are on the hillside. So it stays pretty cool and spring-like most of the year. It can get a little chilly at night this time of year, but it gets up to the 70s or 80s during the day most of the time.
Excellent.
So a lot of people are drawn to that climate, especially as a place to live or retire or be a snowbird and get away from the Michigan winters.
That actually brings up one of the questions I usually ask a little later is, what is the best time of year to come to Guanajuato?
Yeah, it really doesn't matter a whole lot. There's a rainy season in the summertime, so maybe from late June to mid-September, there's a pretty good chance of rain, but it's not like it's raining all day, every day. It's just you'll get some thunderstorms in the afternoon, or there'll be a rain for a couple hours and then it'll go away. But it, usually the sun comes out eventually during the day. And so it's still not real gloomy, but it is wetter that time of year. But then the rest of the year, it's pretty nice. It just gets a little chillier at night, like I said, this time of year, and you might need a jacket, but that's about as far as it goes in terms of having to warm up.
Excellent. And if we wanted to suggest a 1 week itinerary, 1 to 2 week itinerary for seeing the area, where would you start us and what would we see first?
Well, I think the best bet would be to go from the airport to Guanajuato City. And this is a really interesting place just to wander and check things out. It's kind of built, the houses go up the sides of the hills and are colorful and lots of pedestrian only streets and alleyways, because there are really only two streets that go through most of the city that cars and buses go on. The rest of them go through these tunnels that have been dug under the mountains. So most of the center is pedestrian only. So it's a great place to stroll around. It feels very European. And there's some museums here and some sights to see. Diego Rivera was born here, so his house is a museum. He's the famous Mexican muralist. Mm-hmm. That was with Frida, and he's on the 500 peso note, and so you'll see him there.
Well, and if you've come from Mexico City and been to the palace, you've seen his murals all over the place. So
yes, there's not much of his work here actually, except for things you would hang on a wall. There aren't murals of his here. Most of those are in Mexico City. So this is a good place to stay for 2, 3, 4 days. Nice things to see, and it's just a good place to wander. And then
hang on, before you head out of town, you said there were some museums to see and you mentioned one. So were there some other ones that we should see before we leave Guanajuato?
Sure. The Alhandiga here, which is the big granary building dating back to colonial times. That's where the first battle took place. Actually, the Spanish were holed up in there and the rebels broke through and routed them. They got off to a good start. And of course, it took 11 years after that before it actually became a free country. The originals got beheaded, and they were actually, their heads were hung on the four corners of that building. So there are still plaques up there and hooks showing where their heads were. So they all came to a grisly end. The Spanish were not real nice people when they caught the ones that had rebelled. So that's a real famous building here, and there's a museum inside. And there are some murals in there by other artists that are really interesting. And then there's a City Pueblo Museum that has some different rotating exhibits, and they have all these little miniatures, which the kids always like because it's got all these miniature scenes made out of clay, and some of them you have to look through a magnifying glass to see. And there's a contemporary art museum and a few other galleries and museums around. And then one oddity here is, I've never really figured out this connection, but there's this big connection here to Don Quixote and Cervantes. And
okay,
apparently just because they were big fans way back when and have remained big fans. And so there's a Don Quixote museum here where they have images from his book and images of him through different artists' eyes. So there's a Picasso, there's a Dali, and then there are a lot of Mexican artists. And so that's kind of interesting as well. And there's actually a big festival here once a year that's the biggest music festival in the Americas, and it's 3 weeks long, and it's called the Cervantino Festival. So it's named in honor of Cervantes.
But it doesn't play just music about Don Quixote.
No, not just Spanish music. And it's music from around the world and dancers and all kinds of interesting things.
When is that festival?
That is in October every year for the days change a little bit here and there, but generally 3 weeks in October.
Okay.
If you want to go book your accommodation early, but that's the only thing you got to really worry about. You can kind of just go out and check out all the shows from there.
And if I wanted to come to Guanajuato and connect with sort of everyday life or culture, what's the best way for me to do that in the city?
Well, this is a very open air kind of place because the weather's nice every day. So there are lots of plazas where you can just sit on a bench, but there's lots of plazas that have restaurants spilling out. And some of them actually don't have much indoor space. It's almost all outdoors and just tables out under umbrellas and under the trees. And one thing that's kind of that drew me to this place is it's a very Mexican city. There are a lot of foreigners here. Just kind of passing through and taking Spanish classes and things like that. But I think there's probably only about 300 expatriates here at the most. So it feels very Mexican, and most of the people you'll see at those restaurants and bars are either Mexican tourists or they're locals. And so it does feel very authentic in that sense. And there are a few local markets here that are always kind of fun to wander through, and some of them have places to eat in them or get a juice or dessert or something.
And do you have a recommended plaza, restaurant, or market that we should check out?
Not any particular restaurants, because unfortunately this is not much of a foodie city. So okay. there are some good restaurants, but they're not typically the just basic ones in the plaza. There is one called Casa Valadez that's right on the main garden that is a good restaurant that I would recommend. But this is kind of a strange city in the sense that there's not one big plaza that's a big square and then everything emanates from there.
Sure, there's Oglo or something. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a very curvy city, so it doesn't follow the usual Spanish colonial layout. So the main plaza here is actually a triangle, and then there are a few others that are just odd shapes as you go through town. And there's a whole bunch of them. Some of them are just kind of little pocket parks, and then some of them are larger with five or six restaurants. Wander through those. There's usually mariachi music playing or some kind of trio playing music. And so it feels very Mexican. And one other big draw of here, as compared to San Miguel, which we'll talk about later, is prices here are set for Mexicans. They're not geared to foreigners. So a lot of times when you go to Mexican resort area, especially, it doesn't feel like it's that much of a bargain because everything's priced for tourists. Whereas here, you really feel like you're getting the leverage of being in a cheaper country.
While we're in a Mexican restaurant, is there anything particularly regional that we should order?
Not particularly here. It's kind of funny. Their signature dish here is a very low-end dish. It's called enchiladas mineras, and that for the miners. This was a big silver mining city, and so it's basically cheese enchiladas with potatoes and carrots on top. So it's not anything too exciting. It's filling and it's relatively good for you, I guess, but it's not a very exciting dish. But I actually do street food tours here, not because that's a great money-making business, but it's just fun for me to take people out and show them the city. We go to a lot of food carts and eat tamales and gorditas, which are kind of these stuffed corn patty things, and get fresh squeezed juice, which is always great because it's, I don't know, like $1, $1.25 to get a 16 or 20 ounce fresh pineapple juice or orange juice made in front of you. Or you can get healthy and get beets or carrots or greens put in there, and they'll basically make up whatever you want if you're trying to get a high energy fruit shake in the morning.
Excellent.
This seems like a good place to take a break and talk about our sponsor, who is DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. If you've been listening to the show over the last couple months, you know they're my favorite travel guide. I do happen to have the Mexico Guide in my collection, so I opened up to the colonial heartland of Mexico, which is where you'll find the state of Guanajuato. They have, for both Guanajuato and San Miguel de Allende, street-by-street maps of the colonial center, as well as a suggested walking tour how to see those cities. They have a great two-page colorful shot of San Miguel de Allende. And then one of the things I like about the guides is because of the pictures, things will catch my eye. And one of the things I don't think we talk about is the city nearby of Paracutin and the volcano. And what caught my eye was this picture of a church half buried by the solidified lava of one of the world's newest volcanoes. So check them out, DK Eyewitness Travel Guides at DK.com. I am curious if any of you, like me, are fans of the guidebook series. Can anybody beat 20 DK Eyewitness Travel Guides? Let me know in the comments of this show.
Anything else we should see in Guanajuato before we move on?
There's a neat funicular that goes up to a lookout point, so I definitely recommend that. You can ride up the side of the mountain and then have a great overview of the city. And any time of the day, it's really beautiful. And you can also have a drink up there if you want and order a beer or a michelada, which is kind of like a beer Bloody Mary, which people either love or hate.
That sounds awful to me, but I don't like beer, so...
Those are pretty much the highlights. And, you know, check out the indoor market here, Hidalgo Market, which is just an interesting place to wander around. And that's pretty much it. There are not a lot of excursions outside of town, except there are some haciendas you can go see and give you a sense of how people used to live in the grand silver mining times.
Excellent. And then where to next?
So then I would head on to San Miguel de Allende, which is an hour and a half away. And I just want to mention another place real quickly because it's kind of in between the two. It's kind of a triangle. But Dolores Hidalgo is actually where all those rebels started out marching. That was where the grita was, the yell, where the priests kind of rounded up the troops. And then they walked to San Miguel de Allende and rounded up more people and then walked on to Guanajuato. But the reason you would go there, it's kind of a day trip place. You wouldn't spend the night there usually, but it's a big pottery center for Talavera pottery. And so it's a good place if you want to go buy anything for your house in terms of, some people even take back a whole Talavera sink, or they take back tile to do their kitchen, put in accents and things like that. But it's known for that. And it's also known for these ice cream carts that serve all kinds of crazy flavors of ice cream, like shrimp and tequila and corn. And so people go there.
I've had corn ice cream. That's actually not too bad, but I have not had shrimp.
Yeah, that I have not had that either because it does not sound very appetizing.
I've had garlic. That's surprisingly good. So you never know.
That's kind of a side trip, but most people would move on to San Miguel de Allende and spend the rest of the time there. And you can do some little side trips and excursions from there, but that's a good base. It's a great place to just stroll and eat well and go shopping is what it mostly boils down to.
Okay. In terms of stroll, where should we stroll? Any particular neighborhoods or plazas or whatever?
Yeah, everything. That one is set up like a typical Spanish colonial city. So there's one big main plaza that's kind of the heart of everything. And the big draw there is there's this beautiful church that the legend goes that the architect had never left Mexico, but he saw these beautiful European churches on stamps that came from Europe. And he modeled this church after the great European cathedrals. So it looks very European and very grand. And that's the center of the plaza. And the plaza there is blocked off to traffic, which is always nice. So you can walk around and not have to dodge any cars. And then going off from there, there are all kinds of streets filled with boutiques and jewelry shops and good restaurants and bars. And you can speak English there for better or for worse because it is a very Americanized city. So if you don't speak much Spanish, it's a great place to be able to ask for whatever you want and be understood.
So we go to Guanajuato if we want to improve our Spanish, and we go to San Miguel if we want to enjoy Mexico and not necessarily work on our Spanish.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a very artistic city. The way it became such an expat center is a lot of artists moved there and opened these workshops and galleries. I'm talking like in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And it was a very bohemian sort of place that was kind of undiscovered.
And all types of art, or painters or potters or?
Yeah, painters and sculptors and potters, okay. But more painting than anything, I guess. Huh. And then over the years, that attracted more and more people. And as the path usually goes, the artists come first and then the gentrification starts as more money comes in. And
the artists move out because they can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, they move to the edge somewhere. But there actually still are a lot of artists there, and it is still a very artistic city. And if you're interested in that kind of thing, there are lots of classes around where you can take painting classes or pottery classes and study with people who are quite talented. And it's also become very much a literary magnet. There's a big festival each year, book festival, that draws a lot of big name authors, people, you know, everybody has heard of, bestsellers.
So authors in English then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the whole conference is in English, and I guess there's probably a little bit off to the side that's in Spanish, but it's mostly in English, and it's geared to people writing in English, and that's in February each year, so it's coming up soon. It's a big event, and it's probably one of the biggest ones in English in this part of the world for sure. And it's the usual with workshops and lunches and breakout sessions and all that kind of thing. And there are different levels depending on how serious you are and how much you want to go to. That's a big draw. And there's actually a big English library there, which is kind of an odd thing to find. Usually in a Spanish-speaking country, it's pretty huge. And they have one whole section that's dedicated to people who reside in San Miguel de Allende and are authors, and it's shelves and shelves. So there are a lot of them who have settled there as well. And then there's an area outside of town that used to be a textile factory that they've turned into a gallery space, and there are probably 40 or 50 different art galleries there, which kind of goes to show what wealth is there in terms of artists.
You also mentioned excursions. Are there places that are typical excursions from San Miguel de Allende?
Yeah, there's a pyramid outside of town, actually, which is quite impressive. I mean, not on the level of Chichen Itza or Uxmal or a place like that, or Palenque maybe, but still a very important and interesting place to visit. That's an interesting excursion to go on because it's kind of one of those cosmic places where everything lines up during the solstice, and actually all the planets line up at one point. And how they knew all that, who knows, but it's always kind of fun to go see that history and get a good explanation of it all. And it's in a beautiful setting out in the countryside where there's nothing else around. And so that's always kind of nice. It's not crammed in next to a lot of stuff. There's no vendors. It's just a really quiet, peaceful place to go visit.
And which of the native peoples lived there originally and built the pyramid?
Well, that's kind of up for discussion, actually.
Okay. So this is like Teotihuacan, where they're really not sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things, too, where it's kind of a mongrel building edifice, whatever you'd call it, where I think a few different tribes added on different parts, and there's kind of some argument about who it was exactly, whether they were there originally or whether they came in later. And there was some influence from the people who were in Teotihuacan. There was definitely some influence from there, but it was a different collection of tribes, I think, if you ask the archaeologists who worked on it.
Okay.
But it's definitely part of Mesoamerica, and apparently it influenced a changing of the map. They didn't think Mesoamerica extended to this area, but it definitely did. And so they've kind of redone the map a little bit in regards to that area. So that's definitely worth going to. And then in that same area, there's a beautiful canyon where you can take horseback ride excursions. Coyote Canyon Adventures is the company there that leads excursions out into that area. And it's just a beautiful area. You can also do rappelling and things like that if you really want to get more hardcore and do some serious adventure. But the most popular thing to do is take a horse ride through there. And once again, there's nobody else around. And it's just a really quiet, peaceful area, very close to the city, 20, 25 minutes away. It's not very far at all. And they kind of combine it where you have this ranchero breakfast before you set off with a local farming family there. And then you go ride through the canyon on your horses and you have lunch out there in the middle of it. And it's just really a peaceful, beautiful place. I would highly recommend that.
Excellent.
And there are a few other things you can do. You can do a hot air balloon ride. You can go do some mountain biking. You can do excursions that are hikes. You can ride for 4 or 5 days on a horse too. I should mention that same company will do longer excursions for people who are wanting to really go explore the countryside.
What's going to surprise me about Guanajuato?
What would surprise you for this city is how strange it is compared to the rest of Mexico in terms of the layout, like I was talking about, and
right,
how little traffic you have to contend with, because a lot of Mexico, let's face it, is really noisy and congested, and it can be kind of chaotic, whereas here it doesn't really feel that way at all. And even in San Miguel, there's a lot of traffic, but it feels calmer, I guess, would be the right word. It's still noisy, don't get me wrong. I mean, Mexicans have a super high tolerance for noise, and it's kind of mind-boggling sometimes. You'll hear these fireworks that sound like cannons going off at 5 or 6 in the morning, and the archaeologist that took us to that pyramid said that that's a practice that dates back to the Mayan times, where they used to wake up the sun god by being really noisy right before dawn. So I think it has carried through a couple thousand years to the current times. And it amazes me that you'll hear sometimes three or four competing stereos going at once and then a mariachi band on top of it. And they're not even fazed by that. They just kind of tune it all out, where it drives us crazy. But if you've grown up with that, you're used to it, I guess.
And if I looked at the guidebooks for the region, which, one of which apparently was on my nightstand, what do they recommend that you say not worth the time?
There's not really some big, major, huge site here, like St. Right. Mark's Square or the Colosseum or something like that, that everybody goes, oh, you got to go there. So it's, I don't think there's as many letdowns in that sense. I do think, like tourism boards everywhere, the state tourism board will tell you there are lots of other places to go in the states. Please go to Salamanca or Irapuato or León City, but honestly, they're really not worth going to. I mean, even the Mexicans will tell you that. They'll say, oh, it's where I grew up, but there's nothing to see there. And they're very honest about that because they're sort of industrial cities. This is a fairly prosperous state because there are a lot of car factories and Nissan and Chevrolet and GM. And Siemens has a plant here and Pirelli tires. And there are a lot of companies like that, which is great for job creation. And it's great for expansion of the middle class and all of that. But you're not going to go to a city because they have a great industrial base. That's not real exciting. One thing I would mention real quick, though, the city León, which is where the airport is close to, is the shoe capital of Mexico. And it's where there are probably 50 or 60 shoe factories. And what's funny about that is they don't all get exported. A lot of them stay in Mexico. And they have these malls in León that are nothing but shoe stores. So if you're a person who's really into shoes, then it would probably be worth taking a little excursion over.
I hear the sound of some people booking a trip right now, but not me.
No, it's not my thing.
I'm the one pair of shoes a year kind of guy, but...
But it is quite an amazing thing if you are into shoes. I mean, you can shop for 8 hours straight and not go to the same store twice. And
I think I've had nightmares like that with my daughter. But
yeah, and one of them is right across from the bus station. So if you take a bus into León from Guanajuato, you can walk out the door, walk across the street, and then there's this covered area that's probably at least 1,000 shoe stores. So it's quite a lot. I mean, you'll never get through them all.
Interesting. Now, you were saying that you wouldn't take a trip to someplace industrial. You're actually talking to somebody who did not one but two different tours of auto assembly plants last year, one in Detroit and one of the Corvette plant in Kentucky. So
wow.
Apparently I might.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you could set that up and you could do a whole tour here. I think there are five different car companies that have factories around here if you're somebody who's into that. Which, here's another funny side note, cars are about 30 or 40% more expensive here, and I can't for the life of me figure out why, because most of them are shipping up to the U.S. and selling for much cheaper. So I don't get it. Maybe it's a disincentive. They don't want people to drive so many cars on the roads.
Interesting. What a warning you would give.
There's not a lot of crime here. This is one of those states that where it says nothing to report on the U.S. State Department warning thing. But like anywhere, there is some. I mean, you have to be careful. It's most of the things I hear happening to people are they're wandering around drunk at 2 a.m. and they get mugged, or they end up in a bad neighborhood and looks pretty dicey and they get scared because there's graffiti on the walls and there's some gangster looking guys standing around. But in general, it's quite a safe place. This is not like going to Rome or Lisbon where you might get pickpocketed and there's a very good chance of it. That's not really in the culture here. Even in Mexico City, unless you're in a really bad marketplace, you're probably not going to run into any pickpockets. So you can feel relatively safe about that. You don't have to worry much about getting robbed at an ATM or anything like that. And then as far as food and drink goes, it's not nearly as dicey as it used to be in terms of getting sick from the food or the water. Sure. You still can't drink the water out of the tap. And so you need to be drinking bottled water or carry a purifier or whatever. But almost every place you would eat uses those 5-gallon purified water containers. And they're careful about washing their dishes and washing their vegetables in iodine solutions. Or it's not like you're going to get tap water mixed into your fruit shake or something. It's they're not just careful for tourists, they're careful for everybody, because nobody drinks the tap water. So you pretty much don't have to worry too much about that. You can eat street food as long as the place is busy. But the one caveat is everyone says don't eat strawberries off the street because...
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it is too bad. But you should wash them first, and preferably in...
Water with bleach.
Some kind of water with bleach or iodine, because... Yeah. They're too close to the ground, and you never know what they're fertilized with. And this is not an uncommon developing world thing, but a lot of times farms will fertilize with manure, and so it's sure. just not a safe thing to eat that right off the street. So otherwise, though, most of the fruit is already peeled and chopped up when you would buy it on the street, so that's usually an okay thing to eat.
Right. As we start to wrap this up, anything else that we should know about going to Guanajuato, the whole state of Guanajuato, before I get to my last, say, four questions?
Here's a little tip for you. If you come into the airport, there are two exchange booths. Go past the first one because they have the worst rate you'll find anywhere, and go to the second one, which charges a normal rate. But really, the best advice these days is what use you'll do ATM. Most anywhere is use the ATM.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
And you'll get charged a couple of dollars, but the exchange rate will be much better, and it's easy and safe, and there are ATMs everywhere. And depending on what bank you use, some of them have agreements with banks in Mexico where, for example, I think with Citibank, you can use Santander here and you won't get charged. But the best bet is if you have some credit union or brokerage firm or something like that, ATM, where you don't get charged anything or get reimbursed. But you're not going to get hit too badly here, so just plan on using the ATM.
Excellent. You're standing in the prettiest spot in the whole state of Guanajuato. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Wow, that's a tough one. I would say probably from that lookout point I was talking about, there's this big statue of the El Pipila, who was a big hero during the revolution, and there's a terrific panoramic view up there. And so if you search online for Guanajuato, you will probably see that image a lot. so this is
up there where I'm having my beer Bloody Mary.
Yes. And,
okay.
So that's probably the most Instagram shot of Guanajuato. So I'd say that would be the best one for here. And then San Miguel de Allende, probably on the square, looking up at the Grand Church there, would probably be one you see a lot. But also, there are so many great streetscapes there that almost anywhere you walk and just take a picture. I said to my wife the very first time I came here, I said, I think this is where we want to live. And I told her this 24 hours after I had gotten here. So she said, you're crazy. You just got there. What are you talking about? I said, it is almost impossible to take a bad photo here. I mean, like, you just walk around. If you can't get a good photo here, you should just stop and not ever be a photographer.
Just buy postcards.
Yeah, because it's pretty tough. Either of these cities. I mean, it's just really beautiful and really easy to get great shots. And so those would probably be the two main places, but you can wander off in any direction and really get some nice photos.
Excellent. So you are now a resident of Guanajuato, of Mexico. When do you feel closest to home? When does it feel like this is just home now? And when does it feel like it's a different world?
Yeah, it's funny. This feels more like home than when I go back to the U.S. I live in Tampa, and that's not where I grew up. It's not where I spend any time. We just moved there because of my mother-in-law lives there, and it was nice to have some help with a child. And the weather's nice there. It's beautiful and nice beaches and all. But this feels more like home than that does. But I guess when it doesn't feel like home is when people are speaking Spanish all around me really rapidly, and I can't understand very much of that conversation. My Spanish is just kind of middling, and I can get by. But I work all day in English, and that doesn't help it one bit. And I have to leave the house before I use it. So that's when I definitely feel out of place. And then when I go to some cultural event where everybody breaks into song and everybody knows the song and I have no idea what they're singing, that's when it's really obvious that I haven't grown up here.
Excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Guanajuato, Mexico?
There are a lot of cultural things that are kind of true across Mexico true across Latin America, really. The sense of time is very fluid.
Sure, sure.
And, so if somebody tells you their party's at 7, you really don't want to show up before 8 because you'll be the first one there. And if they say they're going to come by at 3 o'clock, then you shouldn't get too antsy about it for at least an hour. So that's a common thing across the culture. But I think what's unique here is this is oddly kind of a very conservative part of Mexico. Uh-huh. In terms of it being quite religious. There are churches everywhere, and every single neighborhood has a saint day, which is kind of a weird thing that I've never gotten used to. So every neighborhood has its own patron saint, and so once a year they will have a huge celebration on whatever day is that saint's day. And so there will be this odd little dance they do with the kids where they put on different outfits, and one of them's a bull, and one of them's a devil, and one of them's a floozy, and one of them's a cowboy. And they do this rehearsed dance with this little flute music playing, and they crack a whip. And then there's a mass, and then they parade the saint through the streets. And most of the streets here are pedestrian only. They're alleys that go up a street, up steps. And so you'll just be hearing this noise, and you go, oh, okay, it must be whatever neighborhood saint day. and these are going on. There seems to be one every week of the year. And so I guess there's at least 52 neighborhoods around. But that's one thing that seems to be kind of unique to hear, just because it's such a tradition that happens in every neighborhood.
Interesting. Last two questions. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in the state of Guanajuato, Mexico, when what?
When you see images and streets that have Miguel Hidalgo's name on them, because he is their George Washington, I guess you would say. Uh-huh. And so there's everywhere you go, there's a street named after him. There's a burger place named after him. There's a taco stand named after him. And you see his statues of him. You see his face everywhere. So if you haven't figured out who he is by the end of the week, you're not paying attention.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Guanajuato in three words, what three words would you give me?
Good for pedestrians.
Okay.
Lots of history would be three words too, but I think what sets it apart is that it's a good walking city.
Okay, excellent. Where can people read more about your travels?
They can catch me on perceptivetravel.com. That's where I'm editor, and I'm only doing some of the content there. I'm editing the rest. That's narrative stories from book authors that comes out once a month, and there is a blog attached. And then my own blog is the Cheapest Destinations blog. That's cheapestdestinationsblog.com.
And the book of the same name for that one, which is in its fourth edition. Do I have that right?
Yes, in its fourth edition, yes. The World's Cheapest Destinations, and it's subtitled 21 Countries Where Your Travel Money is Worth a Fortune, so where you can get the best values in the world.
And what's the newest country added onto that list this year? I don't remember.
I added Slovakia in and took out Argentina. But what's funny is Argentina will probably go back into the next one because there's a big financial crisis going on there again. It seems to happen every decade. And so now if you go in with dollars, things are really, really inexpensive.
Good to know. I'm actually heading there in just a little over a month. So.
Oh, excellent. Take a briefcase of cash, though, because you will not get the same rate from the ATM. There's a
interesting.
The blue market, because I think that sounds better than black market. But if you change actual dollars, you'll get a better rate.
Huh. Good to know. Our guest again has been Tim Leffel. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing with us your obvious love for Mexico and specifically for Guanajuato.
Thanks for having me. It was great being on The Amateur Traveler.
In news of the community, I heard from Jordan about last week's episode on Delaware. He says, "Hi, Chris, I just listened to your episode on Delaware, and I have just a few things to add to Southern Delaware since I have been going to Dewey Beach every summer since I was 11 days old. First, from north to south, it goes Rehoboth, Dewey, Bethany. The bike ride from Dewey to Rehoboth is lovely using 1A. Past Silver Lake, there are lots of places to rent bikes in downtown Rehoboth, and before 10 a.m. between Memorial Day and Labor Day, you can bike down to the boardwalk and then to Dewey. I think the beaches in Dewey are the best, but I'm biased because they are rarely crowded and have the best people watching. Bethany is much more of a family town, and if I had young kids, I think that would be the best place. As far as places to eat in Rehoboth, Royal Treat is definitely the best place for breakfast and ice cream, but they don't have any lunch or dinner. Jake's is the choice for seafood, but be sure to have a reservation. Rehoboth also has a big LGBTQ scene, and there's a large stretch of beach to the south where everybody congregates during the day. In Dewey, it is much more focused on nightlife, but the best restaurant for breakfast is Sharky's, great hangover food, and best place for lunch and dinner is probably Nalu, a Hawaiian-themed restaurant, or maybe Que Pasa, which is Mexican and right on the bay.
The best bars are starboard. It's very obvious and has a great white shark breaking out of it. The Bottle and Cork, the self-titled greatest rock and roll bar in the world. North Beach, which is right on the bay, and the Rusty Rudder. I don't go to Bethany much, but I do know that a great place for dinner is a barbecue restaurant called Bethany Blues. Just one more thing, the Inland Bays in LSD, Lower Slower Delaware, are great for water sports of every kind. The Rehoboth Bay Sailing Association, just south of Dewey, has sailboat rentals and lessons. There's also a sailboat rental place just north of Bethany called Coastal Kayak. I didn't really intend to write that much, but I thought I had to be included on what I assume will be the only episode on Delaware. Thanks for your great podcast. Can't wait to see where you take us next, Jordan. Thanks, Jordan, for giving us those details. I put Jordan's comment on the episode on Travel to Delaware so that people who find that episode can find his great suggestions as well. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget to rate the podcast. It helps people find us. You can find me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.